Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. Today we're going to talk about the difference between pleading guilty to something or pleading no contest to something, or then also, of course, the Alford plea. What does that mean? Because all three of those mean that you're going to get punished for something that you're accused of doing. So what's the difference? And this came up because I mentioned a couple days ago in a video that a guy who got arrested in Hillsdale County had pled no contest to something. And of course, he's going to get punished. And so people say, what's the difference? How does that work? So it's an old legal concept. Goes way, way back to the common law in England, often called nolo contendere or nolo contendere, which means no contest, I believe in Latin. But here's what you're doing, okay? So if you think about the legal process, you're accused of a crime. We're not talking lawsuits here. We're talking crimes. But you're accused of a crime. You get brought into court for an arraignment. They tell you the charges against you, ask you if you understand them, and they have you enter a plea. And most people will enter a plea of not guilty simply because that allows them the opportunity then to find out what the case is all about, find out what the prosecutor's case looks like, and then possibly work out a deal. And that deal will often end with you saying, okay, you know something? They got me, so I'm going to plead guilty, or I'm going to plead no contest. Or, under certain circumstances, I'm going to get an Alford plea. But all three of those, on some level, you're saying something to the effect of, yeah, I deserve to be punished for what I'm accused of doing, but they have slightly different ramifications. So here's the deal. Generally speaking, they often say that a no-contest plea, as opposed to a guilty plea, is you're admitting the facts, but not the guilt. Okay, and there's a slight distinction there. And you might say, why would you ever not do this? Well, sometimes they won't let you. But here's the thing, you get arrested and they've got charges against you, and it looks bad. Wrong place, wrong time. And your attorney or you are talking to the prosecutor, and you say, look. We don't think we're guilty on this one, or I don't think I'm guilty on this one. However, I understand that fighting this is going to be almost impossible. The facts certainly look bad. Is it possible that you'll let me or my client plead no contest to this as opposed to letting them plead guilty? And a lot of times prosecutors will say, sure, go right ahead. But sometimes prosecutors will say, no, we got your guys so dead to rights that either you plead guilty or you go to trial and we're going to get a jury to say he or she is guilty. But you might say, well, who cares? What's the difference? And this is a distinction that does matter because there are often legal ramifications that arise from a criminal proceeding. So let's suppose, for instance, that you are involved in an accident for which you are charged criminally and you anticipate someone down the road, you might get sued. After all, this is America. So you don't want to plead guilty for the traffic accident if you can avoid it. Because if you plead guilty to the traffic accident, the people who sue you can walk into court and go, this guy admitted he did it. He pled guilty. There's nothing to defend here. So we're suing the guy for damages. Now all we got to do is fight over damages. So if you can, you'd rather plead no contest where you go, look, the facts kind of look like I did it. I'm not going to bother defending it, but I'm not admitting guilt. And that's the key distinction here is you're not admitting guilt. But the problem, of course, is that they're not always going to offer this to you as a possibility. And, you know, it might not matter, but there's another reason that this might come up. And this is important to understand. Let's suppose that you're charged with a crime and the facts are really weird and the application of law is really weird. And they go, look, no one contests the facts of the case, but we do contest the applicability of the law to the case. And the best example I can give you is one I've used before, but Dr. Kevorkian in Michigan was charged for murder in cases where he was alleged to have assisted people committing suicide. And as his attorneys ably pointed out to several courts, including, I believe, on appeal, at the time, there was not a law on the books in Michigan saying that that was a form of murder. And there had never been a case where somebody had been convicted of that that had been upheld by an appellate court. So the argument is, look, no one's disputing these facts. Okay? In fact, I believe that Dr. Kevorkian came into court and said, yes, I admit it. This is what I did. The only question is, how does the law apply to this? So if he had wanted to, and I don't think he ever did because I think they tried these cases, just kept winning them. But if he had wanted to, he could have taken one of them and said, no contest. No contest. Now, he would have gotten punished in the meantime and probably, you know, incarcerated. But then what would happen is you could take that up on appeal and say, look, we never admitted guilt. We simply said there's no contest to these charges because we weren't disputing the facts. And now on appeal, we're going to ask a higher court to straighten this out. You don't see a lot of people doing the no contest, though, where they're facing certain jail time with what amounts to a conviction. Because if you're going to sit in jail anyways, you may as well fight it out in court and see if you can, you know, take it up on appeal if you lose. But you don't plan on losing, of course. But the real key here is that, number one, it might help you with the liability issues later if they allow you to plead no contest versus guilty. And then it also might help you on appeal if, in fact, you have a rock-solid plan to appeal. So now here's the thing. It's not always an option. There are situations where a prosecutor will come to a defense attorney or a defendant and say, look, we're going to offer you a deal. You plead guilty to it, and we'll give you the deal. And you might come back and say, I'll plead to it if I can plead no contest. And they might say, no, you have no choice. This, I mean, that's your choice. Your choice is, guilty or we're going to trial. And so that's the case. That's the case. But one thing you have to remember is that no matter what happens in court, whether you're pleading no contest or you're pleading guilty, the judge will bring the defendant into court with counsel if they're represented. And the judge will ask the defendant, you know, do you understand that, you know, we've been informed that you're going to enter a no contest plea to these charges or a guilty plea, if that's the case. And hopefully the defendant will say, yes, I understand that. And then the judge will walk through the entire process of laying out the case that the prosecutors had or ask the prosecutor to lay out their case and then ask the defendant, do you understand everything that was just said there? And if you say, yes, I understand it, and the judge will say, at this point now, do you want to enter, what plea do you want to enter? And if you've been authorized to get the no contest, you might say, okay, at this point, Your Honor, I enter the no contest plea. And the judge will then ask you and your counsel, do you guys or gals agree that the evidence here was enough to get a conviction, at least on the facts of the case, without admitting liability, or excuse me, guilt. And that's the thing is the judge or the attorneys will make sure is clear on the record. Yes, we're pleading no contest because the facts are enough to constitute a case, except we are not admitting guilt. And that's the key. So we're going to reserve the issue. And it's never, you know, we're not going there. It's better than a reserved issue, I guess, in that respect. The judge will make sure that the defendant understands what they're pleading to, and then also will make sure that the facts make sense. You can't plead no contest, or guilty for that matter, to a set of facts that wouldn't constitute a conviction if a jury found all of them to be true. So that's another important thing. I've seen that once in a while where a prosecutor either misses something or the parties miss something or a crime is mischarged. Somebody, you know, they did something that would amount to this, but they're charged with this, you know. And a judge might go, I don't see that. I don't. And I've seen it actually happen in court before. I've actually seen a judge go, excuse me, but how do those facts constitute that crime that this person is pleading guilty or no contest to? Doesn't make any sense to me. So if the court won't accept it, the court will then ask them to go back and either work out a better deal or get their facts straight so that it happens. But so that's the no contest plea versus the guilty plea. And I mentioned a while back about legal concepts that confuse people. And I said one of the problems I often have is in the news, somebody will be, you know, a famous defendant. They're charged with a crime and they go into court and they plead guilty. Not no contest. They plead guilty. And on the record, the judge will say, are you pleading guilty because you are in fact guilty? The person will say, yes. Did anybody threaten you or bribe you or do anything to make it so this is not your free choice? No, this is my free choice. and you're pleading guilty because you are, in fact, guilty? Yes. 3 minutes later, they walk out on the courthouse steps, hold a press conference, go, I didn't do it. Not guilty, didn't do it. And I said, there's a logical disconnect there. Now, I understand that people have pled guilty to things they didn't do. I understand that. And I understand that people have pled guilty to things that they thought they could beat at trial, but just, you know, either they thought this was the easiest way out or they couldn't afford a good attorney, whatever. But the real point is, in my mind, intellectually, that when you see the person on the courthouse steps saying, I didn't do it, you got to remember that 5 minutes earlier, they were under oath in a courtroom swearing, yes, I did do it. So I was cautioning people to take that into account, okay? But I had several people at that point say, but Steve, what about an Alford plea? An Alford plea, A-L-F-O-R-D, Alford. And I said, oh, that's a different thing because the Alford plea specifically allows you to do what I'm talking about. So if you are charged with a crime and the circumstances are just right, there are situations where you can go into court. And if you've worked this out with the prosecutor, you can actually say, we'd like to enter an Alford plea where you plead guilty for technical reasons or legal reasons. But you actually say, I'm pleading guilty, not because I am guilty, but I will concede that the people or the prosecutor has enough evidence to convict me, or they have enough evidence for the judge or jury likely to be persuaded to convict me. And different states have different rules on exactly how it's phrased. But the point is that you're not admitting guilt. And in fact, you are maintaining that you're not guilty. And you might say, where did this strange animal come from? Well, there's a guy named Henry Alford, I believe in North Carolina, who was charged with murder at a time when murder pretty much meant you were getting the death penalty. And he pled guilty, he says, to get out of the death penalty. Because at the time, if you pled guilty to murder, you were either, I forgot it was, you were guaranteed that you weren't going to get a death sentence, or at least it's highly likely you wouldn't get a death sentence. But he got life in prison. So he's sitting in prison, and a couple years later, he's thinking about it, going, this doesn't seem right. So he filed an appeal, and the argument on appeal was, I pled guilty simply because I was so scared of the death penalty that I pled guilty to something I didn't do. And it made it to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court looked at this and they thought, interesting question. But you know something? If we let people spin around their guilty pleas years later because they say, oh, I was scared of the penalty of something else, so I pled guilty to this. And the argument was that some kind of coercion or something. And the Supreme Court said, you know something? Number one, we just can't allow that for policy reasons. I don't think the opinion said that, but let's face it, that's one of the things you're getting at here. But they said, you know something? Here's the deal. If you pled guilty to something and the facts supported the conviction and the facts were convincing enough to where anybody says, it makes sense that this guy's pleading guilty to those facts, then why wouldn't that guilty plea stand up? So the Supreme Court said, no, this is absolutely tenable as long as the facts would support the conviction if, in fact, there had been one after a full-blown trial. So they sometimes call this the best interests plea, meaning that it might be in the best interests of all parties. The best example that most people have heard about is the West Memphis Three, and that was the three young men who were accused of murder, and there have been a series of documentaries and books written about it, and I've seen several of them and read some of it, and I'm here to tell you that it looked to me like those guys deserved a new trial. And when it came out that they were making a very strong argument to get a new trial, the prosecutors pulled them aside, you know, and said, look, guys, you've already spent like 18 years in prison. How about this? We're going to let you guys enter an Alford plea with the stipulation that if the court accepts it, you will not be sentenced to anything beyond time served. Meaning that you walk into court, raise your hand, enter the Alford plea, and you guys are free to go. And you're alternative at this point is you're entitled to a new trial. Okay, let's have a new trial where you might get convicted. You might not get convicted. No one knows what's going to happen. Worth a shot. And after you spent 18 years in prison, you look at that and go, wait, I've got the bird in the hand where I can walk out the front doors of the courthouse, first time in a long time, or I can roll the dice and try to clear my name at the risk of going back to prison. So they took the Alford plea. And so the Alford plea in that instance, and like I said, this is the one most people have heard about. These guys went into court and said, look, the facts here could support a conviction, but we maintain that we're innocent. We're not guilty. We are simply entering the Alford plea as a best interests plea. It's in our best interest. And quite frankly, the state would have a hard time retrying a murder case 18 years later. You know, witnesses move, witnesses die, witnesses' memories get faded over time. So it was probably in everyone's best interests to do it that way. There are some people out there that say, you know something, I would go to, you know, hell and back to clear my good name. It's easy for you to say if you haven't spent 18 years in prison for a crime you didn't commit. So I don't fault anybody for taking one, especially as well represented as those guys were at that time. So that's the difference between a no contest plea, a guilty plea, and an Alford plea. All three of them can wind up with you being convicted and being punished for a crime, but each one's got slightly different nuances, and that's what you need to know. Questions or comments, I'll shoot them away. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.